MZTV.
Who in the world can explain John 1:1 plainly and simply? Well, I can, and I'm going to do it today. I've done it before, but today you're going to see it plainer and simpler than you've ever seen it before. That's because I'm the world's most outspoken Bible scholar. You may have heard that on the street. Well, I'm here to tell you that it's true. And my passion is to take these complicated theological issues. I don't like to call them theological issues, so why did I just do that? Truths about God that are oftentimes confusing as they are written in the scriptures, because as you know, the scriptures were purposely dictated to human beings by God in a way that is a little bit unusual, some may say obscure, and many would say complicated. But John 1:1 is important because this is the verse that many people go to, many Christians go to quote, prove the Trinity. I'm very concerned about the Trinity, very concerned about it because believing the Trinity is a denial of the death of Christ. You've heard me say this many times. As far as I know, and I'm not saying this to brag, I'm just stating the facts. I don't know of anyone who's ever asked themselves why the Trinity came into being. It's just, yeah, the Trinity. Well, we don't, Trinity, yeah, well, we hate the Trinity. We got to explain the Trinity. It's just like, well, why is it even here? Why is the Trinity this doctrine that says that Jesus Christ is God, or is an essential part of God, an indispensable part of God, the Father, God? God and Christ are one being. So they say, why is it even here? I'm looking for motives. I always have. So it didn't come in by accident. There's a very important reason why it came. It's a satanic reason. It's an evil reason. And this teaching is so subtle, so seductive, that it is not of human origin. The Trinity is not of human origin. You may say, what are you talking about, Martin? Came about the Council of Nicaea in the 4th century. Yes, it was developed then by human beings sitting at a table, chit-chatting, talking, formulating, but the origin was demonic. Even Paul says in Ephesians 6, we do not wrestle with blood and flesh, but with sovereignties and authorities and world mights of this present darkness among the celestials. So the celestial realm, the evil citizens of that realm, work their will in the realm of humanity. The people doing the dirty work have no idea that they're being animated by demonic forces. And I've told you many times that the sacrifice of Christ, the pulling down of bulwarks, the demolishing of Satan's kingdom, it was not done in a corner. It was done plainly and evidently. And Satan can't do anything to change that, but he can lie about it. He can misdirect you. He can obscure and obfuscate the truth. And that's just what he's done. And I hate it when that happens. And I must expose him. And I'm going to do that right now. Because John 1:1 is so misunderstood. And to me, that so many verses can be misunderstood is evidence that God wrote this book, that God wrote the scriptures. God could have said it a little more on the nose, to the point, but instead, it's there. Don't misunderstand me. The truth is there. But it's so easy to misinterpret it. And this ease of misinterpretation is the litmus test that divides those who love the word and want to analyze it, look underneath it at the original languages, and those who just accept it at what it seems to be saying because it backs up their preconceived ideas about God and Christ. That's what will happen if you're lazy in the Word, and most people are. They get their truth from a drive-through window. It's like fast food theology. People go to their churches, and they say, just tell me what we're supposed to believe. Believe the Trinity, believe free will, believe in eternal torment. Okay, and here's the, quote, verses. And instead of looking into it, instead of being noble seekers like the Bereans, they just accept it at face value because it tickles their hearing. They love it. You see, free will tickles people's hearing. The Trinity tickles people's hearing because they are virtue signalers, those who believe the Trinity, in that they think that they're doing Jesus Christ a favor by promoting him to fatherhood, as if a son could be his own father. Ridiculous, absurd. And yet, that's the common belief. Satan's delighted because, again, the Trinity denies the death of Christ. If you're God, you can't die. Ooh, but that's no good because the death of Christ is the foundation of Paul's gospel. 1 Corinthians 15:1 through 4. Precisely. Satan wants to blow that up. And he's done it. He's done it. By forwarding this popular misinterpretation of John 1:1. So here we go. I'm going to make it plain and simple for you today. I mean, I'm not going to read it first. It just listen to how strange this sounds. But don't be frustrated, because it's this way on purpose. You have to go one layer beneath the surface to find the truth. But in this case, you really don't. That's the weird thing about John 1:1. You really don't have to go beneath the surface. This Trinity thing is such a demonic miracle that people see what they want to see here. It starts right at the beginning. I mean, in the beginning. Okay, how can you screw that? John 1:1. I said I was going to read it without commenting. Okay, I'll try. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was toward God, and God was the Word. All right, there it is. One sentence that is so twisted as to be unrecognizable. Pretzels are twisted less than this. The cords on your computer are twisted less than this. The charger wire for your phones are twisted less than this. In the beginning, they already get it screwed up. Why? Because this is not about the beginning. In the Concordant version, the word the is in light face type, meaning that that word is not in the Greek. It's a definite article, the. That definite article, the, is not there. Easy to see the definite article in the Greek. It's kai, K-A-I. That word's not here in the Greek. Not in any manuscript. So the way this is supposed to read, or the way it does read, is in a beginning was the Word. This is not the beginning. The Word here is the expression, the logos, speaking of Christ. Christ was not in the beginning. Why? Because in the beginning, which, see, God has no beginning and no end. So we can't even contemplate the beginning, the beginning. In fact, it's a contradiction of terms. If God has no beginning and no end, how can you say in the beginning? It's obscene, actually. So it's in a beginning. What beginning are we talking about? That's the question you need to ask in John 1:1. What beginning are we talking about? We're talking about the beginning of Christ. Christ came out of God by his own confession. In a beginning was the Word. And the Word, that is the expression. Christ is the expression of God, the Word. He's the outspeaking of God. God is inaudible, invisible, intangible, unknowable, apart from his image. This is why he created an image. Christ is called the image of the invisible God, 2 Corinthians 4:4. Now, here's the phrase that this proves the Trinity or modalism or any little tweak, which ends up being a huge tweak, that would presuppose Jesus Christ as being his own father, as being the father. In a beginning was the Word, and the Word was toward God. That is huge. The Word was toward God. Now, this proves, all these words are in dark face type, by the way. The Word was toward God. All dark face type. Okay. How can anything be toward itself? The word toward disproves the Trinity. That one word, toward. Nothing can be toward itself. Yeah, but more in a lot of the standard English translation says the word was with God. Same thing. How can you be with yourself? With yourself, toward, with, any of these prepositions. Is that what they are, prepositions? If they're not, I'm sorry. I missed a lot of those parts of speech in school. I don't know what to call them. I know how to use them. I know what they are, but what do you call them? I don't know what a dangling participle is. I don't know. It sounds a little obscene to me. Hey, your participle's dangling. Oh, thanks. Sorry about that. The word was with God, but that's the wrong translation. Anyway, the Greek word here is pros, P-R-O-S. It means toward. What does this mean, Martin? You said you were going to make this plain and simple. It is. Christ points everything, brings everything to God. Christ came out of God. Humanity came out of Christ. Everything that exists came out of Christ. The universe of creation. Yeah, God created the heavens and the earth. Of course he did. Actually, Elohim is the word used in Genesis. But God used other beings to create. He's the ultimate El. He's the ultimate God. The ultimate subjector gave assignments. You do this, you do that, but it's still God creating it. And the great assignment for Christ is you're going to point everything toward me. All creation is going to come out of you. You're going to be the firstborn of all creation and the firstborn from among the dead. Don't let that bother you. That's down the road a little bit, but it'll bother you later. I'll tell you this. Yeah, I'll tell you this. But Christ brings everything back. Everything he does points toward God. I think you see that nothing can be toward itself. All right, now, so far, what have we learned? That this is not talking about the beginning, but a beginning. If it's talking about the beginning, and if it's talking about Christ, then Christ also preexisted with God. Even in the beginning has to be a figure of speech because the beginning denies any sort of timelessness. The beginning. But how can something begin? How can God begin if he has no beginning or no end? This light face, the, is huge. It's huge. In a beginning was the word, and the word was toward God, and God was the word. Okay, here's tricky. Oh, it says God was the word. It says, wait a minute, Martin, it reads a little weird in the concordant version, which you're reading from. My version, the King James says, and the word was God. In every Greek manuscript, it does not say the word was God. It said God was the word. All the Greek manuscripts put God, theos, before word, logos. It's not that logos was theos. Theos was logos. God was the word. What is John trying to say here? If I had written this, I would have written it more plainly. But this proves, among other things, there's many other things that prove I'm not God. Many other things. The state of my kitchen counter, for instance. God's kitchen counter is much more organized than mine. What John is doing here is telling his readers that the God of the Old Testament, the God that Moses saw passing by, the God that spoke to Moses from the burning bush, all the theophanies, that is, the appearances of God in the Old Testament, were actually Christ. That's right. God is invisible. How can God show up to Moses? Can't. But the Word the expression, the image, the visible expression of God can show up because Jesus Christ is a corporeal being. He exists. Jesus Christ exists. I mean, of course he does. God exists, but Jesus Christ is the visible image. That is, Jesus Christ can be GPS'd. Jesus Christ, our Savior, the Son of God, can be GPS'd. He is one being. And he's somewhere right now. Isn't that amazing? He's somewhere. God isn't somewhere. God is everywhere. Omnipresent. You can't locate God. You can't GPS God. Where's God? Put the coordinates in. You can't do that. Jesus Christ, you can. You can. He can only be one place at one time. This sounds blasphemous. It's not. Don't worry. The God of the Old Testament was the Word. See, if you say it the other way, which is the wrong, if you say the Word was God, you might get the indication that Christ is God. But that's the wrong translation. God was Christ. What? Well, yeah, the God of our forefathers, says John, was actually the Word. The Son of God appeared in the furnace with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That was Christ. You see, Christ is able to take all the titles of God. That really trips people up. Christ is worthy. He's such a perfect image. He's worthy to take the title Elohim. He's worthy to take the title El Shaddai or El or Eloah. Any of the El words, the prefix meaning subjector. The Almighty, any title of God, Christ is worthy to take it. It's not that he is God, it's that he's a representative of God so perfectly that we can call him God. He's God, not identificationally, but representationally. I'll say that again, because it sounded kind of profound. Jesus Christ is not God identificationally. He's God representationally. We can call him by the titles God takes because he's such a perfect representation. As he said to Philip, did he say this to Philip? Who did he say this to? Jesus Christ said this to somebody. Might have been Philip. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Oh, that means you're the Father. No. If you've seen me, let me put it this way. You don't need to see the Father because you're seeing me right now and I'm the perfect representation. Show us the Father. That's what the dude said. Show us the Father. Jesus might have said, I can't do that. Why? Because he's invisible, inaudible. Can't show you the Father. But if you see me, you've seen the Father. You get it? Of course. An ambassador to another country goes to that country or is in that country, and the people in that country say, show us your president. Show us the words of the president. Now, if you heard me, you've heard the president. If you see me, you've seen the president. I mean, you don't need to. He doesn't need to come here. He's busy. So I'm not speaking of our current president. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. So Jesus Christ brings everything toward God. The word toward, even the word with, disproves the Trinity. That one word disproves it. You can't be towards yourself or with yourself. And God was the Word makes more sense than the Word was God. I forget whether it makes sense or not. That's what it is in the Greek. God was the Word. God. You know God, you fellow Israelites, you know God? Yeah, well, God actually was the Word. You saw Christ when you saw God. And now this one came into flesh, came into humanity as a man. Before he wasn't a man. He could look like a man once in a while if he wanted to, but he had not come into the human race as a limited, squashed down, humble human being. But now he has, and this one that we walked with, and we touched and we ate with. This one that you crucified, this one was the God of the Old Testament. He's the one that showed up. God doesn't show up anywhere. He just is. So there it is. If I think of a way to explain it more simply than that, or more eloquently, I shall do so. But until that time, I hope and pray that this suffices.